Chapter 7. Communication. Before 1860, it could take 6 weeks for a letter to travel from New York to California. Letters were taken by boat to Panama, then carried overland to another boat, which took them north. Californians joked that events were forgotten on the East Coast before they were known on the West Coast. But this situation began to change, and to change quickly. Moving arms. In 1791, the Frenchman, Claude Chappe, invented a new method of signaling. He put up tall buildings in long lines. At the top of each building were arms which could be moved into different positions. Each position meant a different letter, from A to Z. This worked in daylight and when you could see for quite a long way. In 1794, news reached Paris by this method that the Prussians had taken the town of Cosne-sur-Lescaut, 145 kilometers away, in less than an hour. By 1852, there were 556 of these buildings in France and 250 more in the rest of Europe. Chappe, though, wasn't happy. He had hoped for much more, much sooner, and he killed himself in 1805. The stone with his name and dates on it shows two wooden arms in the at-rest position. In 1790, people in Philadelphia, U.S., began to buy and sell parts of companies. Shortly after this, a group of businessmen in Philadelphia put up a line of these stations between the city and New York to communicate prices. The stations also used the sun and mirrors. If the sun was shining, information could travel between the two cities in 10 minutes. The Electric Telegraph. Between the 3rd of April, 1860, and the 24th of October, 1861, horses carried mail between St. Joseph, Missouri, and Sacramento, California. At a cost of $1 for 14 grams, letters and packages could be carried 3,000 kilometers through the six states between Missouri and California and arrive within 10 days. Although the service never made money for its owners, its story is still told. It all came to an end in 1861 when the Pacific Telegraph Line was completed. After that, messages got through very quickly, although letters took more time until the railroad to California opened in 1869. The beginnings of electric telegraphy go back to the early 19th century, but the first working system was invented by the Englishmen William Cook and Charles Wheatstone in 1837. This used five needles, which pointed to different letters on a board. By 1843, the two men had built a connection along the railroad between Paddington in central London and Slough, 35 kilometers to the west. 2 years later, this was very useful when a murderer was seen getting on a train at Paddington. A message was telegraphed to Slough, and the police were waiting for him when he arrived. In 1837, the Americans Samuel Morse, an artist with an interest in telegraphy, and Alfred Vail, an engineer, invented a new way to signal letters and words. The telegraph made immediate use of this. Now, instead of moving needles, the operator used a simple key to send long and short sounds. At the other end, these sounds were printed onto a piece of paper as long and short lines and then had to be written out in normal language. In 1855, David Hughes invented a printing telegraph. After that, the message was simply typed at one end of the line and printed in words at the other end. In 1851, Britain, which already had 6,400 kilometers of telegraph line, was connected with France, and in 1858 with the U.S. But the wire across the Atlantic Ocean was too thin, and it failed within a week. Another wire, put down in 1865, was still too thin and also broke. A successful connection was completed the following year. By the 1870s, Europe and America were connected to India, the Far East, and Australia. Progress in communication affected many areas of life. In Aachen, Germany, in 1849, Paul Julius Reuter started an organization for sending business information. He started to sell news reports as well, and his company, Reuters, still does this today all around the world. In the Crimean War of 1853 to 56, A wire was put in place across the Black Sea from Balaclava to Varna in Bulgaria. This allowed British and French commanders to contact their governments using the existing European system. The telephone. Ordinary people could also use the telegraph for urgent messages, but these had to be short and impersonal. This changed in 1876, when the telephone was invented, allowing people to communicate in a more human way. Although there are a number of possible inventors, most people believe that the person responsible was Alexander Graham Bell. He was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, but the family moved to the United States when he was 23. Both his mother and wife were deaf, and his father was a speech teacher, so Bell had a lifelong interest in speech. "Mr. Watson, come here, I want you," were the first words he spoke on the telephone. They weren't meant to be sent, but Bell was working on one end of the system while his assistant was listening in another room. The first telephone exchange opened in New Haven, Connecticut, with 21 customers. In Europe, Bell increased interest in the telephone with a number of talks, including one that he gave to Queen Victoria in 1878. In the same year, the first company was formed in Britain. It is interesting, though, that Bell always refused to have a telephone in his own home. At the beginning, all telephone connections were made by operators in the exchange, and this gave acceptable employment to women. After 1899, it was possible to connect using numbers on the phone, but the women were paid very little, and their bosses saw no reason to change in a hurry. The Bell Company didn't use the new system until after the First World War. The first international telephone line connected Paris and Brussels in 1887. By 1900, international services were being connected as well as local ones. This meant putting more wires under the ocean. Britain was connected to the continent of Europe in 1891. Although existing telegraph wires could be used, long-distance telephones needed stations to make the sound stronger along the line. New York wasn't connected to San Francisco until 1915. A radio connection between London and New York was made in 1927, although this depended on weather conditions. Similar connections were made to Australia and South America in 1930, and from that time, the telephone was truly a world service, although it was expensive. Connections using wire took longer. The first one across the Atlantic Ocean wasn't in place until 1956. The telephone didn't become common in private houses until the 1920s, and even then, only for the middle and upper classes. Since that time, it has reached everybody in the world's richer countries. People used to have one phone in the hall for use on important occasions, but many now have phones in the kitchen, the living room, the bedroom, even in some houses, the bathroom. In the 1980s, cell phones appeared. The first ones were very big, and young business people wore special suits with a deep pocket to hold them. Now, they are hand-sized and very common, although, strangely, fewer Americans own them than Europeans or Japanese. It has always been difficult to build telephone lines in poorer countries. Because it is now easier to build a system to make cell phones work, it is possible that in some parts of the world, telephone lines will never be built. Radio. There were limits to the usefulness of the telephone. Ships were out of contact, and all places needed connections and exchanges. In 1894, a Brazilian, Roberto Landel de Moura, sent a radio signal in Sao Paulo. He worked for the Roman Catholic Church, and the church didn't like this new invention. He was told to stop work on it, and the following year some angry people burned down the building where he worked. 5 years passed before Landel was able to show his invention again. By this time, the leader in radio was the Italian, Guglielmo Marconi. When he was only 20 years old, Marconi had done his first work with radio on his family's land near Bologna. By 1895, he had succeeded in sending messages using the Morse system for 2.5 kilometers. At the other end of the line, his brother fired a hunting rifle to show that they had been received. Marconi received no support in Italy, so he went to London, where he succeeded in interesting the post office. He formed his own company in 1897 and 2 years later sent a message to France. By 1901, he had sent one across the Atlantic from Poldhu in Cornwall to St. John's, Newfoundland. This was surprising, since the world is round and radio waves travel in straight lines. The answer came in 1924, when it was discovered that the radio waves were sent back to Earth from high up in the sky. In 1909, Marconi received the Nobel Prize. By that time, over 300 ships were using radio signals, and there was already a public service across the Atlantic. In 1904, the Cunard ship, Campania, had begun to print the daily news for passengers. In 1910, while it was sailing from Belgium to Canada, its captain read the daily news report and realized that the murderer, Dr. Crippen, was on the ship. He didn't tell the other passengers, so millions of people around the world knew, but not them. The police were waiting for Dr. Crippen when he arrived in Canada. When the Titanic sank in 1912, the two Marconi men on the ship, Jack Phillips and Harold Bride, stayed and sent messages until the power failed. Bride lived, but Phillips went down with the ship. Their signals, using Marconi's invention, brought the SS Carpathia to the scene to save 712 people from the ocean. The early messages were sent across the Atlantic using Morse's system. With better equipment, speech was first sent from Virginia to Paris in 1915. After the First World War, public broadcasting increased greatly. By 1922, there were 600 broadcasting stations, and when the BBC was started in 1927, there were already 2 million radios in Britain. Television. It is difficult to say who invented television. Unlike some other new ideas which suddenly came to one person, people had talked about the possibility of television, or long-distance sight, since Marconi invented the radio. The three possible inventors are John Logie Baird from Scotland, Vladimir Kosmo Zhvarikin, who grew up in Russia but did his work in the United States, and Philo Taylor Farnsworth, who came from Utah in the U.S. Zhvarikin is usually seen as the father of TV because he invented an electronic tube in 1923. John Logie Baird was the first to send a simple television picture across a few meters in 1924. He showed his new invention in Selfridge's department store in London the following year. The pictures, though, were of very poor quality. Farnsworth was the first to send good pictures. He did this in 1927 using a tube he had built himself. Zhvarikin wasn't able to do the same until 1934, although Farnsworth's camera needed too much light, and Zhvarikin's method was better in the end. The BBC bought Baird's system and began regular test broadcasts in 1929. They also tested an electronic system invented by Marconi. In 1937, the BBC decided that the Marconi system was the way forward and stopped using Baird's system. Zhvarikin and Farnsworth each worked for a different company, and at around this time, these companies fought in the U.S. courts about who invented television. Farnsworth's company won the case, and we should probably think of him as the real inventor of TV. The first person to invent color TV was either the Mexican Guillermo González Camarena or the Hungarian Peter Goldmark, who worked in the U.S. Most Mexicans will say it was González, but Americans and Hungarians say that it was Goldmark. It is often like this with inventions. Both men produced quite similar systems in 1940. They used turning circles colored red, blue, and yellow. Unfortunately for Goldmark, he worked for the CBS company, but most televisions at the time were made by another company, RCA, and these couldn't use Goldmark's system. RCA had plans for color television too, but they weren't ready at the time. When the company did introduce color in 1954, they used their own electronic system. González started the first television station in Mexico and later sold television equipment to the U.S. Strangely, both men were killed in car crashes, González in 1965 and Goldmark 12 years later. In recent years, computers and the internet have changed the way we communicate.